All right, let's get ready to start this goddamn show.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
Dino Files.
Hello and welcome to Dino Files number 18. I am Dino and I am going to bring you some files. A little bit different on this show today. We're not going to be doing the regular headline breakdown because there's one headline that's taken over everything, and that is the American Healthcare Act. So we're going to have to sort of muddle through this, and I've been doing a lot of digging on the AHCA. Oh, I got to take my glasses off. Wow. So you guys can actually see my eyes and connect with me on a human level. I've been doing a lot of digging on the American Healthcare Act, and I'm going to sort of see what's going on and try to reveal to you what I can from the American Healthcare Act. It's a strange thing. People are really, really freaking out about it, and there doesn't seem to be much reason to, based on the language of the bill itself and the things that it doesn't remove. The things that it doesn't remove are the primary parts of Obamacare that people were angry about. And so it's going to be a little disappointing for those of you who are on the right who are watching this show and who think that the American Healthcare Act is this big reform thing that's going to take us to a free market healthcare system. It's just not going to happen, and I'm going to tell you why. And nobody is talking about this that I can see. Not even the fabulous and incredible No Agenda show has discussed this. Let's see how this is. Just turned off. I thought there was a voice when I turned it off. Not even the fabulous and incredible No Agenda show has covered what I'm going to cover today. So it should be a very interesting show, and it should be a little bit upsetting to some of you. But, you know, different perspectives, different views, and you know, things that don't get mentioned to you, you might be upset when things are revealed. My cat's lying in a sunbeam. Anyway, so I'm going to do what I can as far as a headline rundown is concerned. It's going to be like two or three stories maybe, and then we're going to dive right into the American Healthcare Act because I think it's a very important thing, and I'm going to talk a little bit about free speech before we get into that. American Healthcare Act is going to be like the last third of the show. The majority of the show is going to be me covering these first couple of little stories. Our first story, and I get this from NewYorkTimes.com, Macron decisively defeats Le Pen in French presidential race. I'm going to read the first couple of paragraphs. Emmanuel Macron, the youthful former investment banker, handily won France's presidential election on Sunday, defeating the staunch nationalist Marine Le Pen after voters firmly rejected her far-right message and backed his call for centrist change, according to Partial Returns. Mr. Macron, 39, who has never held elected office, will become the youngest president in the 59-year history of France's Fifth Republic, after leading an improbable campaign that swept aside France's establishment political parties. By that, they mean the socialists. The socialists have been ousted from the French government, which is probably going to be good so long as Macron isn't even farther left than they are. We've seen in Venezuela that socialism isn't working in the 21st century. So, Mr. Macron's victory offered significant relief to the European Union, which Ms. Le Pen threatened to leave. His platform to loosen labor rules to make France more competitive globally and to deepen ties with the European Union was also likely to reassure a global financial market. Jittery at the prospect of a Le Pen victory. So, Le Pen was going to basically do Frexit. The French version of Brexit. And so those of you who are pro-Brexit or pro the dissolving of the European Union, going to be a little bit disappointed at this. Those of you who are pro-EU, going to be happy at this result. It's an interesting thing happening in Europe right now, actually. You've got a lot of problems coming from increased, and I've covered this on previous shows, on previous episodes of Quick Hits, and on cats making noises. On previous episodes of Quick Hits and on previous episodes of Dino Files, I've covered the fact that the European Union is suffering some social upheaval due to increased immigration, especially from the Middle East. They've got some major problems going on there as far as, well, you know, Sam Harris says it best, you can't really bring a Bronze Age religion into the Western world without there being some problems. And that's not to say that all of Islam is bad, but it is to say that Islamists are bad. Islamists, the people who believe in fundamental Islam, tend to cause problems when they come in contact with the Western world, you know, with all the freedoms that we have for women and shit like that. They tend to cause problems. So, that being covered, Le Pen lost. Sorry about you. Honestly, I wanted her to win a little bit just for the sake of the show. It would have been incredible for the show if Le Pen had won, because I would have had such a good time covering French politics. And at this point, with Macron's victory, I'm bored with French politics now, because there's not going to be anything really interesting happen. Maybe a couple of cool reforms toward the center, maybe moving away from socialism a little bit, but outside of that, I don't see much happening that's going to actually interest me. So, we'll move on to another story, if my browser will cooperate. Okay, so it's kind of an interesting thing that happened with the white supremacist movement, and I've got to get rid of this cat. Hold on. Anyway, an interesting thing kind of happened with 4chan and their, you know, messing with people on the internet. For some reason, some people from 4chan got it in their head to convince people that the OK hand sign is a white nationalist hand sign. I'm just going to break it down for you here, that this would be a W and that this would be a P and it would stand for white power. That's not actually the case, but this got national coverage. It's sort of like Pepe the frog. That meme had been around for a long, long, long time, and it was never considered to be a white nationalist thing until, 4chan Nazis basically started using it as their symbol. And this is kind of the same thing, except this was deliberate. They wanted to trick people into thinking that the simple okay hand gesture was somehow a white supremacist hand gesture, and it started to get around that it was a joke or a trick I'm not remembering the word that actually would describe what it was, but it's fascinating. I'm going to read a little thing from this. This is from Red State. It's a source I don't really like, but they're right about this. It's not a white nationalist hand sign. Hold on to your seats, folks, and follow this one via The Independent. Two members of the alt-right accused of making white supremacist hand signs and white supremacist hand signs in the White House after receiving press passes. This whole thing is a big prank from 4chan. So if you've seen this on your news feeds, the OK sign being a white nationalist or white supremacist symbol, I'm not sure if actually I was blocked when I did that. It's not a white supremacist hand sign. It was a joke, and the internet fooled everybody. And I love that, because it just goes to show you how gullible the media actually is. So let's move on from that. Covered Macron, I've covered this. There's a fascinating story actually coming out of the UK that I want to talk about a little bit. I hope it was that window. Scroll back up to the headline. Leaked documents reveal UK government is planning to ban encryption to get access to your WhatsApp messages. This is from Mirror, and it was posted on the 5th of May. Oh, I never said, today's the 7th of May. All right, the UK government is planning to force tech companies to introduce backdoors for their private messages.
We'll help get the most out of every mile.
As it has, oh my gosh.
Chase down your passion.
Hate that, because I always have to edit them out. All right, so the UK government is planning to force tech companies to introduce backdoors into their private messaging apps, effectively breaking encryption as it has emerged. The measures outlined in a draft document leaked to the open rights group, ORG, would potentially enable the government to monitor citizens' private internet connections, private internet communications on services like WhatsApp, iMessage, and Telegram in the near real time. They represent an update to the Investigatory Powers Act of 2016, commonly known as the Snoopers Charter, which gave the government broad powers to extend its surveillance capabilities. If made law, tech companies could be required to hand over private communications under warrant within one working day. These would need to be provided in an intelligible form without electronic protection. The companies would also be forced to modify their products in order to comply with government demands. The proposed powers appear to be directed at companies like WhatsApp to limit their encryption. Home Secretary Amber Rudd recently accused WhatsApp of providing a secret place for terrorists to communicate with each other. No, everybody I know on WhatsApp is using it to sext. They're not fucking terrorists. However, Silicon Valley chiefs insist that encryption is vital to the safe running of the internet, and that weakening or breaking encryption could put web users at much greater risk. A consultation about the paper, due to end 19th of May, is allegedly underway at the moment, but it is not publicly announced by the government. So, the UK is at it again, folks. If you've been following free speech in the UK at all, you know that they have been slowly sort of clamping down on what is allowed to be said, and it's distressing to say the least. these companies this government is attempting to really reduce the amount of freedom of speech that its population has. And I am upset by that, just because I know that the politics that happen in the European Union tend to flow toward the United States. So that's a thing. I want to make a point, though, about encryption and free speech, and this is something that's important not only for people who are living under regimes that would chill their speech or kill them for speaking, but it's also important for us who are not under those types of regimes, for those of us who just want to speak freely in our homes or among friends or online. It's very important for us, guys like me, who use VPNs regularly in order to encrypt my traffic online, not because I'm doing anything illegal, I'm not, but just because I don't want some of the research I do for this show to come up. And it's frightening that they would have the ability to insert back doors into these kinds of systems. So from Amnesty International, I want to read a little bit of this report that they did on the 21st of March in 2016. This was back when when the FBI was trying to convince Apple to open up a phone that they had, and there was this whole thing about encryption and what should be allowed and what shouldn't. Their headline from Amnesty International is, "Encryption, a matter of human rights. Government attacks on the encryption of online communication threaten human rights around the world," warned Amnesty International in a briefing published today as tech giant Apple challenges the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation in court over an order to provide software to bypass iPhone encryption. The briefing, "Encryption, a matter of human rights," which is Amnesty International's first official stance on encryption and human rights, says that people everywhere should be able to encrypt their communications and personal data as an essential protection of their rights to privacy and free speech. Quote, "At stake in the Apple case is whether a future administration could exploit the next national moment of crisis and use its access to our phones to target journalists or persecute activists and minorities," said Noreen Shah, Director of Security and Human Rights at Amnesty International USA. "Encryption is a basic prerequisite for privacy and free speech in a digital age. Banning encryption is like banning envelopes and curtains. It takes away a basic tool for keeping your private life private," said Sharif El-Said Ali. I think it's El-Said Ali. Amnesty International's Deputy Director for Global Issues. "Governments trying to undermine encryption should think twice before they open this Pandora's box. Weakening privacy online could have disastrous consequences for free societies, particularly for the human rights activists and journals who hold our leaders to account." Encryption is incredibly important, guys, for free speech and for journalism. And I'm not saying that journalists do their job, because if you've been following me for any length of time, you know that I have no faith in the journalistic institutions of the United States or of really any other place in the world. But encryption is incredibly important for keeping people who would actually reveal the truth safe. We know of black sites with the CIA. We know of journalists who get in trouble for saying things in briefings. We know that briefings toward press corps or what have you are generally fairly scripted, and you can tell this just by watching or, you know, listening to any number of interviews with people who are involved in these who say that they are scripted. We need to ensure that people are allowed to tell the truth, or at least the truth as they see it, and encryption is a very, very important part of that. Now, they're using the excuse of terrorism, and they're using fear to convince people that encryption is not okay. In the UK, they're doing it, but it's going to come here. Don't doubt me on this. We are on the same road as most of Europe when it comes to free speech, and that is, it's being taken away. Free expression is being infringed upon day after day after day. And if you've listened to any of the shows that I've done before, you know that free expression is the core of a free society, and that a free society must be allowed to disagree, and that people in a free society must be allowed to voice their opinions, regardless of how popular those opinions are. This is an incredibly important thing for not only the public knowing the truth, but also for our own personal political discussions with our friends. This is frightening to me. I'm a person who puts content out online. I'm a person who gives my opinion and gives the news and gives the truth as I see it for an audience of millions, if you choose to listen, right? I'm posting everything that I believe on the internet. And if things that I believe suddenly become illegal to say, that's Not only is that antithetical to my free speech, I should be able to say what I want to say online, but it's also frightening to me. Because if any opinion that I hold suddenly becomes unpopular, then I'm a target not only of people's rage on Twitter, which I can deal with, but from law enforcement. I could be jailed for some of the things that I say if they were to become too unpopular. And the same goes for incredible thinkers like Sam Harris, who, whether you agree with him or not, has an amazing mind, and he says what he believes to be true in a logical and fair way. And again, whether you believe him or not, his point of view is important to the discussion about whatever it is he's talking about in the United States. Guys like that. People who are new atheists. Those kinds of guys. Guys like what Christopher Hitchens would be if he were still alive. These kinds of people are important to our lives in a free society. And if we start allowing unpopular opinions to become criminal opinions, then we tear apart the very foundation of free expression, and not only of free expression, but of intellectual growth as a society. Our views and our opinions need to be questioned in order to be perfected. That's how the process of thought works. That's how philosophy works. That's how law works. I am staunchly against making any opinion criminal. I don't believe in if you have nothing to hide, then you have nothing to fear. Because as soon as whatever you believe becomes criminal, then you have something to hide. Then you have something to fear. And it doesn't make any sense to me. Sorry. My neighbor's being a responsible homeowner and weed eating. Because, I'm sorry, where was I? It doesn't make any sense to me to outlaw these kinds of things, to outlaw free expression of any kind, no matter how unpopular the opinion is. Go back to the last show where Jeremiah and I talked about Squarespace and how Squarespace said that in their response to white nationalists, actual fucking Nazis, building websites using their tools, Squarespace said sunlight is the best disinfectant. Squarespace effectively said, if you want to ruin these people, do it publicly. Don't make us hide them. Hiding them makes them stronger. I think it's very, very important that we all understand the importance of free expression and that we all value it, because there will come a day, if we don't, that it's our opinion that becomes unpopular. It's a frightening thought, but it will happen. If you want to defend freedom of speech, if you want to defend any freedom, you have to defend it for everybody, even the people you don't like. And it's hard to do. It's hard to say, yes, that Nazi should be allowed to speak. It's hard to say that, but it's brave. It's because it's hard that it shows courage. And in saying that, in saying, yes, that Nazi should be allowed to speak, you are saying, I can beat him or her. In saying that, yes, that white nationalist should be allowed to speak, you are effectively saying, I have faith in myself to defeat this person in the public square, to use my logic and my reason and my philosophy to destroy them, or, frankly, with white supremacy, to allow them to destroy themselves, because the theory doesn't hold water, philosophically or scientifically. And that goes for most very bad ideas. We don't need Twitter or Squarespace or Facebook to censor people. We can beat them ourselves. And the alternative is having these outlets censor them and allowing them to run back to wherever they feel the most comfortable and to grow there. Jeremiah mentioned this, and he wasn't drawing a comparison between Gamergate and Nazism, and he was very careful not to draw that comparison. But the movements are what you will expect from any group who is ousted from the public square. They moved over to wherever they felt most comfortable. They made their own platforms in which they could speak their minds to like-minded people and honestly pull more people in. Because when you create an echo chamber like that, you silo people into these echo chambers, what you make is a feedback loop of constant affirmation. And anybody who stumbles upon that is going to see all these people who agree with this idea or set of ideas or whatever it may be. And they're going to see all of this feedback of affirmation, and they're going to say, that must make sense because so many people agree. It's human nature. And so I believe that it's very, very important that we stand up for, incredibly important that we stand up for free speech, even for those with whom we disagree, especially for those with whom we disagree, to whatever extent, even for someone who you may consider to be evil incarnate, they still need to be allowed to speak, because as soon as you make an exception, you're next. That's how it's always gone throughout history. So I believe I've made my point on free speech. I want to move on to the issue of the American Healthcare Act. Now, I pulled this up from, I did a little bit of research. I read some things on Cato.org, And I followed some of their links to some other stories, and I think I've put together a fairly interesting piece of information about this act here. And I think it's important to understand, number one, that the American Healthcare Act, as much as people want to say that people with pre-existing conditions are absolutely fucked, I don't believe it's true. And I will cover that later on, but the first point that I need to make is this. If you believe that the American Healthcare Act is going to be the be-all, end-all of American healthcare moving forward, you're wrong. Because in 1.5 years, when the Democrats take over the House, and if they don't, then in 3.5 years, when they have the presidency and the House, they're gonna take over government pretty soon. I mean, you can't have a guy like Trump without there being a major backlash from the left. We're gonna go single payer. It's gonna happen. You can't really stop it at this point. We are already on that track. And a conservative pundit, Crownhammer, said as much not too long ago, that we are already on the track towards single payer, and there's no way to turn this train around. People already think healthcare is a right. And whether you agree with that or not, it has taken hold in popular consciousness, especially on the left. And we are gonna have single payer sooner or later. The only question is how much later. And frankly, I'm sorry about my mic. And frankly, it doesn't really matter, because it's gotta be within the next 2 or 3 presidential cycles, which is an incredibly short amount of time from a historical perspective. So we're going to have single-payer healthcare. That's just a given. As I said, I did some reading and a little bit of reading, and I want to make the point. So I'm just going to read this from cato.org. I'm only going to read a little bit of it, but I think it's important to consider, because this is something nobody's really talked about. And what this is, I'm sorry, I don't know why I just put Facebook. Oh, I do know why, but I'll get to it. The reason that nobody's heard about this is because it's not helpful to the narrative that the mainstream media is trying to pass off as true. That narrative being that the Trump administration and Republicans in Congress have gutted American healthcare completely, and that nobody's going to be safe ever again. It's simply not true. And this from cato.org. GOP healthcare bill is not repeal. It is Obamacare light or worse. House Republicans have approved a bill to revise Obamacare with only one vote to spare, 217 to 213. Democrats in the media are having such conniptions about the American Healthcare Act, you'd think Republicans were really about to repeal Obamacare. They're not. Rather than do what their supporters sent them to do, to Washington to do, repeal Obamacare and replace it with free market reforms, House Republicans are pushing a bill that will increase health insurance premiums, make health insurance worse for the sick, and ensure that Republicans, rather than the real cause, Obamacare, will take the blame. Now, of course, this is written with an agenda, but the information in it is good, trust me. Let's start with where this whole mess started, March 23rd, 2010. Let's skip ahead a little bit. Obamacare's core provisions are the community rating price controls and other regulations that supposedly end discrimination against patients with pre-existing conditions. How badly do these government price controls fail at that task? Community rating is the reason former President Bill Clinton called Obamacare the craziest thing in the world, where Americans wind up with their premiums doubled and their coverage cut in half. Quotes, community rating is why women aged 55 to 64 have seen the highest premium increases under Obamacare, which is true. I will cover the story, it's from the Washington, later on. Community rating literally penalizes quality coverage for the sick, to the point where Harvard economists found patients with multiple sclerosis and other high-cost conditions, quote, cannot be adequately insured, end quote, under Obamacare. It is the driving force behind Obamacare's narrow networks and exclusion of premier hospitals. Worst of all, community rating is taking health care away from the sick. Community rating has driven every last insurer from the exchange in East Tennessee, leaving 43,000 Americans, including many with expensive conditions, with no coverage after December. It may soon do the same in Iowa and another 1,000 counties that have only one insurer remaining exchange. Why? Because community rating forces insurance companies to cover the sick below cost, which simply isn't sustainable. The only solution Obamacare supporters offer is to keep throwing more money at the problem, which also isn't sustainable. Obamacare is community rating. The AHCA does not repeal community rating. Therefore, the AHCA does not repeal Obamacare. In fact, Republicans are modifying Obamacare's community rating price controls and other regulations in ways that will accelerate Obamacare's race to the bottom. Why? Republicans are salivating at the bill's $1 trillion of tax cuts and cuts to government spending. So would I if I thought those cuts would last. That's from the art. In reality, the AHCA gets the health policy wrong in ways that create armies of pro-tax voters who will undo the bill's tax spending cut. So just based on this, you know that a primary part of Obamacare was a system of community rating, and this system is really, really damaging to the actual coverage that the sick are receiving, especially those with the worst conditions or pre-existing conditions. I'm going to read a little bit more about this, also from Cato, but this is actually a mirror from the Wall Street Journal. How Obamacare punishes the sick. Republicans are nervous about repealing Obamacare. This is from the 28th of February, 2017. Republicans are nervous about repealing Obamacare's supposed ban on discrimination against patients with pre-existing conditions. But a new study by Harvard and the University of Texas at Austin finds those rules penalize high-quality coverage for the sick, reward insurers who slash coverage for the sick, and leave patients unable to obtain adequate insurance. The researchers estimate a patient with multiple sclerosis, for example, might file $61,000 in claims. Obamacare's rules lets MS patients buy coverage for far less, forcing insurers to take a loss on every MS patient. This creates an incentive, quote, an incentive to avoid enrolling people who are in worse health by making policies, quote, unattractive to people with expensive health conditions, end quote. The Kaiser Family Foundation explains. So, this is why people are seeing premiums skyrocket. It's because the most expensive care is having to be met below cost by insurance companies. To mitigate that perverse incentive, Obamacare lobs all manner of taxpayer subsidies at insurers, yet the researchers find insurers still receive just $47,000 in revenue per MS patient, a $14,000 loss per patient. Predictably, that triggers a race to the bottom. Each year, whichever insurers offers the best MS coverage attracts the most MS patients and racks up the most losses. Insurers that offer high-quality coverage either leave the market, as many have, or slash their coverage. Let's call those losses what they are, penalties for offering high-quality coverage. The result is lower-quality coverage for MS, rheumatoid arthritis, infertility, and other expensive conditions. The researchers find these patients face higher cost-sharing, even for inexpensive drugs, more prior authorization requirements, more mandatory substitutions, and often no coverage for the drugs they need, so that consumers cannot be adequately insured. What this is basically saying is that because the, what did they call this system? Sorry, I've lost my words first. What they're effectively saying is that the community rating system within Obamacare forces companies, health insurance companies, to effectively raise premiums because they have to cover the losses from the community rating system, where they have to keep the insurance affordable for people with pre-existing conditions or incredibly expensive conditions. They also have to make up those losses somewhere else. And it's incredibly disturbing that people are not talking about this, because this seems to be the main reason that premiums are going up for people who are on Obamacare, especially those who are somewhat in the middle class. And I'm going to read from the Washington Post. I don't think I can. Yeah, I can't. Never mind. Anyway, and I did look at that story earlier, but I guess I've been cut off now because the Washington Post puts things well. Community rating is why women age 55 to 64 have seen the highest premium increases under Obamacare. So effectively what they're saying is that these people within these ranges who require more care, and women 55 to 64 do require more care, are seeing higher premium increases because the insurance companies are being forced to cover insurance at below cost. What's interesting about this is that there are many, many things to consider with regard to insurance and what insurance actually does to the marketplace. I am one of these people who blames insurance for the increased cost of health. This isn't strange. If you actually do a little bit of research on it, you'll see that healthcare costs more as insurance expands. And the same thing has happened, honestly, with college tuitions. As a recent college graduate, I can tell you, college tuition is only getting more expensive as the government-backed student loans become more prolific, I suppose. Not prolific, it's not the word I'm looking for. But you know what I'm trying to say. When there's an endless supply of cash there for these companies to go after and to attack and to try and get for themselves, they can raise prices as much as they want to. This is true for colleges. This is true for doctors. This is true for medical equipment suppliers. All of this. The reason that healthcare is so expensive is because insurance is so broad. If insurance were not so broad, then healthcare would not be as expensive as it is. And frankly, not nearly as predatory. There's also a problem that you have with people simply not paying doctors. Apparently, something like a third of people, or rather a third of doctors' copays are just not paid. They just aren't given. This is one of the reasons that prices have to go up, right? Because you can't keep things that low. You can't keep prices that low. You can't keep prices low at all when you're not being paid. And so this is the thing that I haven't seen anybody talking about the American Healthcare Act, and the reason that I don't think the American Healthcare Act actually matters, because it's not getting rid of the thing that makes Obamacare what it is. It's not getting rid of the thing that has made Obamacare, honestly, kind of fail. If you look at it, I mean, people want to act like Obamacare is Jesus, like the second coming of Christ. But in fact, if you look over the history of Obamacare, since it was enacted, premiums have only gone up. Nobody's gotten cheaper insurance. Very few people have, if any. And businesses, small businesses especially, are absolutely screwed by Obama. And none of that changes with the American Healthcare Act. None of it at all actually changes with the American Healthcare Act. So this isn't the apocalyptic scenario that liberals want to make it out. And it's also not the second coming of Christ that Trumpian conservatives want to make it out. It's neither. It's more of the same. And I want to make that very, very clear. I also want to make it incredibly clear that we are not going to see the end of government healthcare any soon. In fact, it's only going to expand. We are going to end up with a single-payer system. I'm going to give it 10 years, and that's probably long. The American healthcare system is, at this point, so screwed up, I believe, by government intervention, that there is no way that we can continue without going payer. Especially in the eyes of the populace. I want to read this from Mises Wire. 1/3 of Americans are on government health care. The U.S. House of Representatives voted today to repeal and replace Obamacare. Unfortunately, those who use the phrase repeal and replace are greatly exaggerated to the extent are greatly exaggerating the extent to which the Affordable Care Act is duly repealed. While perhaps a tiny step in the right direction, the new legislation signals no departure whatsoever from the long-established trend of expanding the role of government programs in subsidizing and regulating the healthcare industry. Perhaps worst of all, since this is being called a repeal, many may be prompted to think that the U.S. healthcare system is a free market system, or that government spending is only a very small role in the industry. This couldn't be further from the truth. In fact, the U.S. is fourth in the world in terms of per capita government spending on healthcare, behind only Norway, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands. That's government spending, not overall spending. In fact, those numbers from the World Health Organization, WHO, are from 2014, and with the expansion in Medicaid spending under Obamacare, it's entirely plausible the U.S. has moved into third place in the past 2 years. They've got a handy little chart. But how does this translate into actual persons on government programs? Viewed from this angle, we find that 1/3, a full 1/3 of Americans are either currently enrolled in government health program or have recently been enrolled in. There are approximately 55,504,000 Americans on Medicare, which covers the elderly. But there is also an additional 74,506,000 Americans on Medicaid or CHIP. About 11 million of those are dual enrolled, which means they are on both Medicare and Medicaid. If we pull the 11 million out of the Medicaid count to avoid double counting, we find that there's a total of 119 million Americans on government programs, or about 1/3. But wait, you might say, Obamacare expanded the number of people on Medicare, so maybe if we remove all those people, the numbers will be smaller. Yes, it's true, the numbers will be smaller. But as the Kaiser Family Foundation's research shows, the pre-Obamacare average for Medicaid / CHIP enrollment was 5.6 million. If we go back to that pre-Obamacare number, we end up with about 31% of Americans on government healthcare, which is super close to a third. 33.3%, still a hefty number. Moreover, given the way Obamacare repeal, is written, we shouldn't expect any sizable long-term decline in Medicaid enrollment. That upward trend is going to continue unless major reforms take place. As an additional illustration of the outsized role of government agencies in the industry, we might also look to the fact that government programs are starting to eclipse private sector insurance within the health insurance industry, quote. Here's a nugget that encapsulates the health insurance industry. Despite all the noise surrounding the future of the Affordable Care Act, in the first quarter of this year, Aetna collected more premium revenue from government programs, namely Medicare and Medicaid, than it did from commercial insurance for the first time ever. Why this matters? Most people get their health coverage from their employer, and that historically has been the bread and butter of the insurance industry. But the aging population and expansion of Medicaid managed care means insurers are investing more time and money in the lower margin but still lucrative government programs. Aetna, in particular, has invested heavily in Medicare Advantage. This, quote, free market healthcare system of ours doesn't seem to have much in the way of freedom or markets. So, guys, your healthcare is already controlled by government, or at least one third of the population's is. I think it's very important that we consider what exactly this means. It's a little bit complex, but, and it's frankly antithetical to what you've been seeing on the news and hearing from the media. This isn't a gutting of Obamacare. It's simply not. The American, the ACA is still alive and well in the ACHA. There's no real change, and I want to make that incredibly clear. And on top of that, considering that one third of Americans are already on government healthcare in some way or another, we're going single payer. It's going to happen. I don't want it. I'd rather get rid of insurance entirely and watch the prices for healthcare plummet. That's what I would like, but that's not going to happen. We're going to go single payer. It's going to happen. So quit getting so freaked out. Quit getting so wrapped up in everything that this is and everything you're being told by whatever media outlet with whatever agenda. The truth is, this isn't really a big change. And the larger truth is, within 10 years, we're going to be single payer anyway. So it doesn't really matter. Some of you will think I'm callous for saying that. Like, yeah, but what do you do with the sick people in the meantime? What do you do? What can you do? Frankly, what you're gonna do is you're gonna vote Democrat in the midterm election and you're gonna watch single payer get pushed through that much quicker. So the healthcare system as it stands has been fucked up for decades, especially because of insurance companies and how broad insurance. I just want to make that point. And I believe with that story having been covered, that's all I've got for you today. Short show today. Very, very short show today. Only about, just shy of an hour, actually. About 50 minutes or so. It's been a fun show, actually. I'm doing this alone, but it doesn't really... I didn't have a guest in my pool for today. I will have one for next weekend. So this is going to end up being a short show. But remember, you can find this show, all the quick hits, and every other show at AIRAD.io. You go to AI Radio. You're going to find that there. You're going to find any files there. And you're going to find old episodes of Drinky Files there. That's basically archive at this point, but I like having it there. It's a fun show that we did for a very long time. And remember, I'm doing all of this on YouTube. This is all going to be uploaded to YouTube. This, and I'm doing 3 videos a week now, as opposed to the 2 that I was doing before. So that's pretty much all I've got for you today. Remember, guys, it's very important that we respect other people's opinions. I'm really stuck on the freedom of expression. I'm not going to be getting off that train anytime soon either. I'm going to be talking about it forever. The freedom of expression thing is far, far too important. So remember, if you hear somebody saying something you don't agree with, disagree with them. Debate them. But don't try to get some outside organization to silence them. That's fascism, man. That's cultural fascism. It's not government, and you're just forcing these private organizations to silence people. It's cultural fascism. So you're just as bad if you're that kind of person. Remember, it's always, always important for you to be able to express your opinions. Others have to be able to express theirs. And also, quit freaking out about the healthcare thing, because it's effectively the same thing, what we have now. It's pretty much the exact same thing, and it's all going to be scrapped in favor of single payer within the next 10 years anyway. And that's a long, long time frame. I think it's going to be closer to 3 or 4 years. But 10 years at the very, very most, we're going to all be single payer. So if you're one of these people who absolutely loves the idea of government-secured healthcare, you're going to get it. Don't worry about it. Thank you very much for having me with you this evening. Remember, I can be found at Dean Wisner on pretty much everything. Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. And I want to plug one more time, AIRAD.io. Remember, you can donate to the show there, and I'm going to have donation instructions and such in the description in the show notes. You all have an excellent evening, and thank you for having me.
Welcome to AIR, Alternative Internet Radio. We are the podcast network that brings you listener-supported podcasts. Every show on this network is supported exclusively by their creators and their listeners. There are no ads on this network. That means the podcast is the product, not you. And remember, AIR is always looking for new shows. If you've got a podcast or you want to start a podcast and you feel like you would fit well with our family, then what are you waiting for? Send us an email. Our address is admin@airad.io. That's admin@airadio.com.